True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes real.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
From four games on Monday to 17 games on Tuesday, we've got a lot to talk about. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on August 11th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. I kind of cheated there. There were 17 games on the schedule. One of them got rained out. They only played an inning. Whatever, I cheated. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good. Doing good.
Good to hear. Good to hear, Scott. It's a very late start here. Lots of West Coast games as well, so apologies. But we needed the data. Let's do it. Let's talk about the games.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I didn't even ask you who you wanted to do for Oh My Goodness Gracious before we started here, Scott. Something we usually do.
I know. I hate when you do that, Frank. I don't give it any thought until you ask me about it.
So here's what we'll do. I'll get us started. You could think about who you want to talk about. I have actually multiple players, so I cheated a little bit. But I'll start with Anthony Santander, who had a double dong on Tuesday. Now has three homers over his last two games. He's 47% rostered. And in August, super small sample size, seven games, he is batting .429. The strikeout rate is way down. The fly ball rate is way up. He's hitting the ball a lot harder as well. And we spoke about him the other day, and you compared him to Mike Moustakas last season. Anthony Santander kind of had this Mike Moustakas-esque profile where, again, he was making lots of contact. He was putting the ball in the air. You do that in Camden Yards, good things are going to happen, Scott. Your interest level in a 47% rostered Anthony Santander.
Look, it's not there yet. He hasn't been doing Mike Moustakas-like things. And what does that even mean anymore? I mean, who is Mike Moustakas to the people listening right now? I'm not even sure that comparison is going to get people excited anyway. But the things he was doing last year that got me so excited, 15.2%. strikeout rate, very good, and putting the ball in the air a ton, which, you know, to some degree that works against the batting averages you're gaining, the batting average points you're gaining with the low strikeout rate, all those fly balls. But it of course helps you put balls over the fence too, which is the most valuable thing of all. So, you know, strikeout rate's significantly higher this year, and it's not like the home run output has been particularly noteworthy. So three home runs in 2 days, I'm not sure that's really moving the needle for me.
That's fair. Again, it's a super small sample size. I'm paying close attention to this to see if it carries on throughout August. Again, it's only been seven games. It's a small sample size, but throughout this month, the strikeout rate is way down again. And the fly balls were actually up in July as well. So if he keeps that up, I'm thinking good things are going to happen for Anthony Santander hitting in Camden Yards. Let's rank Santander with a couple of other outfielders who had big games on Tuesday. Rafael Ortega went 4-for-7 across two games with a stolen base. They had a doubleheader on Tuesday. He's now batting over 400 in 25 second half games. He is 40% rostered. And then Lorenzo Cain went 1-for-3 in game one of that doubleheader with his fourth home run of the season. He is batting .341 with one homer, three steals in 11 games since coming off the IL, 25% rostered. Scott, ranks Santander, Ortega, and Lorenzo Cain.
I would definitely go Cain number one. Cain is doing his usual Cain things, making contact at a high rate. He's been running since coming back from the IL too. I think he already has 3 stolen bases in about 2 weeks' time. And if he's going to do that at his age, coming off a leg injury, you know, I take that as a very good sign. I take that as a good sign. I think there's some batting average correction that's going to come in a good way. And he's playing virtually every day too. So I don't know why he can't get back to being the Lorenzo Cain we've always known based on all the factors I'm seeing right now. So he's pretty easily number one. Ortega versus Santander, 2-3. I'm not convinced of the upside for Santander, which isn't to say I am for Ortega either, but I feel like he's a little more interesting right now because he might run a little bit. You know, it looks like he might be a better bet for batting average too.
Would you agree that all three of these should be rostered in 5 outfielder leagues?
Should be. I think that's a little strong. Even my favorite is highly available. I think Cain needs to be rostered in 5 outfielder leagues. I'm not saying you can't roster Ortega or Santander in 5 outfielder leagues, but it wouldn't surprise me if I didn't have room for them either.
All right. Oh my goodness gracious for you, Scott. Did you pick a name out yet?
Yeah, I did.
You don't sound very excited.
Well, I'm not sure what to say about Matt Barnes. He had some trouble in a tie game for the Red Sox against the Rays. Gave up 4 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 walks. And that was after a blown save in his previous outing. 2 earned runs and a third of an inning against the Blue Jays. And now in 5 appearances this month, he's given up a total of 7 earned runs, which isn't great. Isn't a great time to be imploding here as a closer. You know, now that we're in the home stretch, his ERA has suddenly ballooned to 3.52. I'm not sure anything's wrong with him. I'm looking at it now. Spin seems about the same. Velocity's fine. I'm not sure there's really anything wrong with him, but this is how it goes for closers sometimes, where you can just have a rough patch and suddenly your job's in jeopardy. Of course, overall, Barnes has had an amazing season in spite of what his ERA is now. His numbers have been fantastic up until very recently here. So, and I'm not saying the Red Sox are for sure going to make a change, but it wouldn't surprise me if they at least hesitate to go back to Matt Barnes. You know, somebody like Adam Ottavino, he's gotten 8 saves just filling in for Barnes here and there. So it seems like they already have a comfort level with him in that role. I'd be a little worried right now if I had Matt Barnes. I'm not saying like drop him or anything, because I mean, we're talking like top 5 potential. That's what he's been for most of the season, but it's been really rocky lately.
That is insane that Adam Ottavino has 8 saves a season, even with Matt Barnes having 24.
Yeah.
32 total saves for the Red Sox this year. That is a massive amount. It's only August 11th. So that's a pretty big amount there for the Boston Red Sox. Anyway, for Matt Barnes, yeah, I don't really see why he's struggling, because the ways he usually struggles are with walks. And that hasn't been an issue for him all season long. I mean, he's at 2.7 walks. He did have 2 walks today. So,
right.
Okay. But before this, his other struggles, it hasn't been walks. So even with today, 2.7 walks per 9, like that's not bad for a reliever. So, and the strikeouts have still been really good for him. So,
yeah, it doesn't take much. It, you know, relievers don't pitch many innings just by the nature of the role. So it doesn't take much of a hiccup to really for things to start for the numbers to go askew, and that's why. That's why it's so volatile. That's why it's so volatile. I mean, I think Matt Barnes is still their best reliever. You know, not knowing everything that's going on with him, I think they should probably just stick with him, but I'm not sure they're going to.
Yeah. And Adam Ottavino, for what it's worth, he is 16% rostered. He doesn't have great numbers this year, 3.7 ERA. He's got a whip over 1.3. Yeah, 1.33 whip. So it's not that it's not like he's been great this season either, but he has consistently been the eighth inning man and the fill-in for Matt Barnes whenever he can't go. I do want to give a quick, oh my goodness gracious, shout out to Griffin Jacks. Where did this come from? Up against the White Sox on Tuesday. Six innings, three runs, one walk, 10 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 83 pitches. Nine of those came on the slider. His previous two starts, Scott, he had a 4.4% swinging strike rate. So I really don't know where this came from with Griffin Jacks. He's only 6% rostered. Anything to see here?
Well, you only cited the previous two starts. Go back one more start. And I know he got sent down to the minors for a start prior to the previous two. So, you know, that's probably why you broke it up that way. But three starts ago, Griffin Jacks had 16 swinging strikes. So now two of his last four starts, he's had a lot of whiffs for some reason. Now, he didn't even have a strikeout per inning at in the minors. The overall numbers, the ERA and whip, they're pretty good, 3.32 and 1.18. But I don't know why he has these occasional starts where the whiffs just spike for him and he gets a lot of strikeouts, but that's now 2-4 that's happened. And, you know, after that one start, when he got sent back down right away, we said, this might be something to keep an eye on. So that's still where I am with Griffin Jacks. I mean, he's not a young guy. His minor league track record, you know, it's not like it makes your eyes bug out or anything. So I don't suspect there's much here, but if next time out he does something similar, I might start to change my tune.
Griffin Jacks, he is 26 years old again, 6% rostered. Throw him on the scout team. That's what we say for guys like Griffin Jacks. If you play in a deeper league, 15-team roto, AL only, probably should already be rostered in AL only, but you could take a shot in those deeper leagues. But anything shallower, throw him on the scout team. Before we hit the news and notes, we'd like to welcome another fantasy football podcast to the CBS Sports family. Fantasy Football Today, DFS. Get ready to dominate daily fantasy this year with optimized lineups, stacks, perceived ownership, leverage plays, and more. Join Mike McClure, Sia Najad, and me, Frank Stanfill, two times per week in the FFT DFS feed. Our first episode actually dropped on Tuesday. If you want to go check it out, we talked about cash game strategy for NFL DFS with a very early look at week one, some lines, and some salaries on DraftKings. And on FanDuel, you can download and follow the Fantasy Football Today DFS podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to this podcast. And speaking of which, starting next week, I'm sorry, apologies in advance, but this podcast and Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, they're not going away. Only once a week they're going away. So we are moving to 4 days per week starting next week. We'll still be doing live streams Sunday night, and then Tuesday through Thursday night, you can expect the podcast in your feed on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for both Fantasy Baseball Today and Fantasy Baseball Today in 5 starting next week. Again, apologies in advance. We do appreciate all of your support, but in all honesty, it's just getting tougher with football coming and putting out more football content and trying to keep up with everything that's going on with baseball. God bless Adam Azer, because I don't know how he did this for as long as he did. That guy is just built different, because it's hard, man. It is hard to keep up with.
Don't
both
be
football.
Modest, Frank. Everyone wants a piece of Frank. That's why this is happening. Everyone wants a piece.
Is that true? Is that what they're saying, Scott? I don't know.
Look, they're having you host this What is it called?
Fantasy Football Today DFS.
Yeah. No, they didn't ask Adam Azer to do that.
I'm sure they tried. Anyway, news and notes. Both Gerrit Cole and Jordan Montgomery could return from the COVID IL and start this weekend against the Chicago White Sox. Would be a welcome sight for both of those guys. Mookie Betts is still dealing with his right hip issue and may be placed on the IL on Wednesday. So there was a stretch there where Mookie Betts looked like he was coming around, went on the IL.
You know what happened? They moved him back to the outfield. Things were going fine at second base.
He
was making plays on the left field side of the bag, and he was hitting great. And they put him there because they thought it would help keep the hip healthy. And then the first time he goes out to the outfield, suddenly he's being removed with more hip trouble. So, you know, one appearance short of picking up second base eligibility, and now many games short of being in your lineup. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but that's frustrating.
Very frustrating. Yeah, you're right. Four games at second base this season on CBS. You only need 5 games to pick up that eligibility. And speaking of which, yes, Giancarlo Stanton played his 5th game in the outfield on Tuesday, so he now has outfield eligibility. For what it's worth, not like he's been great. He's just over an 800 OPS on the season. Alex Bregman will rejoin AAA Sugarland, my favorite AAA team name. That's awesome. To continue his rehab assignment on Friday, he's expected back next week, assuming no setbacks. Yeah. The year of the setback.
He was expected back this week.
Right.
Year of the setback is right. Hashtag year of the setback. Can't anybody just get better?
We need you. We need you, Alex Bregman. Yuli Gurriel is expected to be activated on Friday. Jared Walsh was not activated on Tuesday, as the Angels had hoped. Rhys Hoskins went to the IL with a groin strain. Brad Miller started at first base on Tuesday. Travis d'Arnaud is set to rejoin the Atlanta Braves on Wednesday. He's 35% rostered and finished as a top 5 catcher in both formats last season, Roto and in head-to-head points. And I could see dropping him right into my top 12, maybe even top 10 catchers, Scott. I mean, he was that good, and the Braves lineup, even without Ronald Acuna, is still a very good lineup, Scott. So what do you think about putting him back in that top 10, top 12 range right away?
I moved him up to 13, but ahead of him, I still have Yasmani Grandal, who isn't healthy at the moment. Mm-hmm. So practically speaking, d'Arnaud is back in my top 12. Now, he wasn't performing that well before getting hurt, and that injury was way back in April, right? So not only 23-game sample for Travis d'Arnaud. So not really much to go on, but you know, there was some skepticism as to how legitimate that 2020 performance was, and I think there still should be. Having said that, it's catcher. You know, it's the catcher position. And if you already missed out on Max Stassi, Eric Haas, Mitch Garver, you know, when you had your shot at them, I think it's worth taking a chance on Travis d'Arnaud. I'd do it over, you know, I'd rather do that than continue languishing like with a Christian Vasquez or Yadier Molina.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. Even like a James McCann, a Sean Murphy, who you could have dropped a while ago, but with Yan Gomes going there, the playing time has basically been split evenly between those two. Looking at the rankings, I think I'm probably going to drop him right into 12, just behind Omar Narvaez and Elias Diaz, who I moved way up, but he's just absolutely crushing the ball right now for the Colorado Rockies. Raimel Tapia was placed on the IL with a right big toe sprain. Connor Joe started in left field on Tuesday. Ross Stripling left Tuesday's start with left abdominal discomfort. Mark Canha left with eye irritation. Akil Baddoo left after a pretty scary collision with center fielder Derek Hill, where they were basically running full speed trying to catch a ball in left center and just collided with each other. So I hope everything's all right with both of those guys. Justin Turner is not expected back until Friday at the earliest. Javier Baez was out of the lineup due to lower back tightness. Jose Urquidy will begin a rehab assignment on Wednesday. Andrew McCutchen could be activated off the IL on Wednesday. Alex Verdugo likely will not return from the paternity list until Thursday. Matthew Boyd will begin a rehab assignment at AAA on Thursday. He's 41% rostered, but Scott, I would imagine you don't have much interest in Boyd because you didn't really like him earlier in the season anyway.
You got it.
I got it. Brendan Rodgers was out for his second straight game with a hand contusion. Kwanghyun Kim went to the IL on Monday does not have anything structurally wrong with his left elbow. Nick Anderson will rejoin AAA on Thursday. He is 16% rostered if you want to speculate on the Rays bullpen, which, it's pretty sketchy most of the time anyway. Rowan Wick was activated off the IL on Tuesday, and I was just scrolling through. There's so many box scores today, but I believe in a game that they lost 6-3, the Cubs pitched Rowan Wick in the 9th inning, so I don't know how much that actually means. But it's something. He's 3% rostered for those in the deepest of leagues who need
saves. It
would
have been the 7th inning because it was part of a doubleheader.
You are correct. That was the final inning that they played, but it was the 7th.
Exactly.
Yeah. We had a bunch of hitters return on Tuesday. Josh Rojas for the Diamondbacks. Josh Donaldson started at DH. Michael Brantley was back for the Astros. And Randy Arozarena returned from the COVID IL. A few prospect updates. Nate Pearson was delayed by a non-COVID illness, but should join AAA Buffalo for rehab work by the end of this week. The Blue Jays have plans to use Pearson as a reliever for the rest of the season. And it's just baby steps, but Jarren Duran has back-to-back multi-hit games. So As someone who spent a lot of money on him in Fab in a 15-team league, I am rooting for Jaren Duran, as I hope everybody is. We want to see the prospects perform well.
Yeah, I think I dropped him in a couple leagues this weekend. Not as deep as a 15-team roto league. But
I can't blame you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where 15-team roto, five outfielders, it's you need anything that you can get. So Jaren Duran, we're rooting for you, buddy. Scott, you have an article that went up on the site. By the way, I mean, we're about 20 minutes into the podcast. We are going to talk about the circle of trust. A few names here in the circle of trust. Are they in or out? The drop-o-meter. Did you know I have some fun facts? Anything to see here? Some starting pitchers that pitched on Tuesday. But let's start with that circle of trust, because you have an article that is on the site now, and it was published before these pitchers made their starts on Tuesday, so it's interesting. But Zach Gallen was at the Giants.
Wait a second. Before we get into it.
Okay.
Do you know what movie the circle of trust comes from? What movie that term had a central part in?
Well, I read your article, Scott, so I already know. But if you asked me this without me reading it, I probably wouldn't have been able to tell you, although I have seen that movie.
You've seen it at least.
I just wouldn't have remembered that part of the movie. But yeah, it's from, is it Meet the Family or Meet the Fockers?
It's Meet the Parents. Meet the Fockers was the sequel to it.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like they made a third one, Meet the Family. I don't know if I'm probably just making that up, but
I think it was called Little Fockers. I actually didn't see any of the sequels, but Meet the Parents is a classic.
You probably don't need to. I think that's the one where they spike the volleyball, right? And like someone starts bleeding in the pool. Yeah. I don't know why, of all the things that happened in that movie, that's what stands out to me. But in the movie, if you get removed from the circle of trust, then you're out. So let's find out about some of these guys. Can they work their way back in? I don't know. Zach Gallen at the Giants, 6 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs. He did have 7 strikeouts in this start. Over his last 5 starts, he has a 5.98 ERA. Scott, the circle of trust for Zach Gallen.
He's out of the circle of trust for me. At least he was in the article. This start was kind of interesting, though, because part of the reason he was out of the circle of trust for me, I mean, the biggest reason is that back in May, he sprained his elbow. Which is to say, he suffered ligament damage in his elbow. There was some fear at the time he might have to be shut down for the season, maybe go in for Tommy John surgery. These were questions. These were possibilities that were being raised. And he came back. He's been back for a while, so you know we kind of that's kind of been swept under the rug. But he just hasn't looked as crisp. You know, he was over 12% swinging strike rate last year, under 10 this year, which is bad. Like, that's a really low swinging strike rate, right? Mm-hmm. He's had some starts where he's looked decent, 2 earned runs or fewer. He's had some starts where he struck out more than a batter per inning, but the consistency hasn't been there. The crispness hasn't been there. I've been scared he was just going to blow up at some point, that the things weren't quite right and he was just getting away with it. And you know, you could argue how much he was getting away with it, because the combined ERA still wasn't that great. But he got 13 whiffs in this one, 13 swinging strikes against the Giants. So that's saying something. And that's the highest swinging strike total he's gotten in a game since before the elbow issues. And I think this is back-to-back starts now with double-digit swinging strikes, which he hadn't done at all since coming back from that injury until these back-to-back starts. So, you know, I'm wondering if he started to feel a little healthier. It could just be a fluke, a coincidence, whatever. I would still say he's out of the circle of trust. And, you know, the way I framed it in the article, being out of the circle of the trust doesn't necessarily mean you have to drop him. Although I have mentioned that I have dropped Gallen in some shallower leagues. It just means he's not somebody you should think of as like a fixture in your lineup. You're going to have to deploy him very cautiously, only with the right matchups, only under the right circumstances. And so I would still say Gallen's out of the circle of trust. But unlike Jack, I forget his last name, Robert De Niro's character from Meet the Parents, when you're out of the circle of trust for me, you can get back in. It's not you're out for good. So fear not, Zach Gallen. You could still find your way back in the circle of trust.
All right. Jack Burns, I believe, is his name in the movie.
That's right.
There you go. Yeah. All right. So you can work your way back in. Yeah. This was an interesting start for Zach Allen. You're right about that. 13 swinging strikes, a 34% CSW. Again, that's caught. Now you see, now Chris messed me up. It's called strikes plus whiffs, and league average is 28%. So 34% for Gallen here is very good. And only one walk. To me, that's the biggest key for Zach Gallen. I don't know what has gone so awry for him, but that year that he had in the minors where he was just amazing, his control was fantastic. And since then, I mean, he's been called up, and maybe it's just him nibbling too much or not trusting in his stuff, but his walks have been massive. This season, over 4 walks per 9. It's been a huge issue for Zach Gallen. Maybe the injuries have contributed to it, but Gallen currently outside of Scott's top 50 starting pitcher ranks and out of the circle of trust as well. Let's see if he could work his way back in. The other one, Sonny Gray. And Sonny Gray is actually very similar to Zach Gallen in that they get a good amount of strikeouts. They don't go deep into their starts, but they just walk way too many guys. And Sonny Gray at the Braves on Tuesday, 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 3 more walks, did have 8 strikeouts, only 8 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. However, the velocity down between 1.1 miles per hour and 2.4 miles per hour on each of his four-seam, sinker, slider, and curveball. Don't like to see that. The ERA is at 4.40. The circle of trust for Sonny Gray.
You're picking all the bad ones. Sonny Gray's out of the circle of trust. Ooh, for me too.
He's out.
He's out, yeah. And then this is kind of an uncomfortable one because if he qualified, he would be 5th in XFIP. And, you know, if I'm going to cite any single stat as a predictor for as a predictor for a pitcher going forward, it would be XFIP. That would be the single stat. If you were limiting me to just one, that would be the one I'd pick. So it's uncomfortable going against a pitcher whose XFIP is that good. But, you know, these observations date back to last year for Sonny Gray, where even though the strikeout rate is good, even though the ground ball rate is good, and those are, of course, help explain why he has such a low XFIP, he's just not efficient enough. He walks too many guys. He doesn't go deep enough into games to make a real impact. I do think the ERA over 4, the WHIP being over, is it over 1.4? What's the WHIP?
I believe it's 1.38 after this start.
So very high WHIP, high ERA. You know, it does look like he may have had some bad BABIP luck. It does look like he may have had some bad home run luck that are contributing to those inflated ERA and WHIP. Nonetheless, even if he hadn't had that bad luck, I still don't think that the impact would be such that I'd consider him a must-start pitcher. Again, just because he's out of the circle of trust doesn't mean you have to drop Sonny Gray, never ever start him. But, you know, you really got to choose your spots with them.
I know that people aren't going to want to hear this, Scott, and I don't have a good reason for what I'm about to say, but I think that there are certain pitchers where you can kind of just look at the underlying numbers and you just don't agree with them for whatever reason, even though they're there and we use them to help with our analysis day in and day out. So usually that's what our process is, and that's what, you know, this process tells us, that Sonny Gray should be better moving forward if he continues to pitch at this level. But there are still just things in his profile. First pitch strike percentage has consistently been lower than league average in his career. Doesn't get a ton of swinging strikes, right around 11% consistently. His chase rate is not very good. I mean, there are just things where if you watch Sonny Gray, he's very inconsistent. So I hear what you're saying, and I don't know if that's like a good enough explanation, but there are just a few players for me.
No, I mean, if there was a perfect stat for predicting how good a pitcher could be, then, you know, this would be way easier than it is. And right. Whoever invented that stat would be a millionaire.
That is correct.
If not more. So, yeah, I mean, Lance Lynn's a good example of the other direction. His XFIP this year is 383. His XFIP last year was 434. You know, and XFIP is going to underestimate pitchers who are consistently good at suppressing hard contact. And you know, part of the reason, so for instance, Lance Lynn's xERAs look closer to his actual ERA than his XFIP. But the reason I generally trust XFIP over xERA is because I don't think many pitchers are good at repeating that soft contact rate year after year, that soft contact rate that xERA so rewards. But Lance Lynn is.
yeah, look, it's not perfect. We're going to use all these different tools to try and help us figure things out and help you guys figure things out. But yeah, it's just, there's some things with Sonny Gray. Other pitchers that are out of the circle of trust. I'm not going to give away the whole article because I want some people to go, I want all people to go read it. But Taijuan Walker and Joe Ross, they're out. They're out of the circle of trust for now.
Get out of here.
One pitcher that remained in the circle was Aaron Nola. And man, yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for the rain, who knows what would have happened in the start. But the game went into a rain delay. Aaron Nola, at the time, 4 shutout, only 1 hit, 0 walks, 7 strikeouts against the Los Angeles Dodgers. He had 13 swinging strikes on 51 pitches. I don't know how the start would have ended, but it looked like it was trending towards being one of, if not, Aaron Nola's best start of the season. So,
yep.
Let's keep it up.
He looked like he belonged in that circle of trust, which is just where I left him. As we've said the last few times we've talked about Aaron Nola, basically everything looks as good as it ever has for Aaron Nola, except the fly balls and the home runs. And he's talked about struggling to get his fastball down. That would certainly explain both of those numbers. Somebody who's used to, whose success has come from pitching down in the zone. But the home runs have, you know, his previous start wasn't that good, but he gave up only 1 home run in it. And I think this is, if we include today's start, abbreviated though it was, I think that's 4 straight starts where the home runs have really not been an issue anymore. So I think he's getting back on track with that. And if that's the case, as good as he's been at missing bats and avoiding walks this year, Aaron Nola, you know, from today forward, it's not a stretch to say he could be a top 5 pitcher from today forward. It's not a stretch to say he could be the number 1 pitcher. That's obviously, you know, asking for a lot of things to go right, but he has that kind of ability, does Aaron Nola.
The rain also cut short starts by Max Scherzer, who was pitching very well. Carlos Carrasco, who only pitched 1 inning. He allowed a 3-run homer to Juan Soto. So maybe it was a good thing that game got cut short for Carlos Carrasco. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to fire up the drop-o-meter here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework. All right, let's quickly just start with those 2 starting pitchers who are out of the circle of trust now. Scott, you mentioned just because they're out doesn't mean you have to drop them. But first off, for Zach Gallen, he's still 87% rostered. What is the drop-o-meter for him?
I would say for Zach Gallen, the drop-o-meter is lower today than it was yesterday. I will put it at about a 5.
A 5. So,
yeah, straight down the middle. How helpful is that?
10 team leagues, maybe some 12 team points leagues.
Yeah. I mean, anything where you got more than 300 players roster, I can't imagine you're going to be dropping Zach Gallen, but in the 250 range, you know, you may have already been pressed into doing that.
What about Sonny Gray?
I hate to be boring, but I'm going to say 5 again.
Would you drop either for Logan Webb or Josiah Gray?
Boy, I just moved both of those guys up. I can't remember where I move them in relation to Gray and Gallen.
I here real quick. You have Zach Gallen at SP 52. You have Logan Webb at 55, just ahead of Sonny Gray. Okay.
So here's how I rank them. Gallen, Logan Webb, Sonny Gray, Josiah Gray. That's how I rank them.
And you
they're all very close. They're all within 10 spots, 8 spots.
You have John Gray and Josiah Gray ranked back to back. It's definitely not confusing at all, Scott.
Yeah, I abbreviate what I've. Here's the thing. So, you know, Sonny Gray versus John Gray, I could always just in my notes here write J Gray or S Gray, right? Now that Josiah Gray's here, I can't just go with J Gray, and I can't go J O Gray either.
That's right.
I got to either spell out John Gray or go with Joss Gray. And that's just, yeah, that's just a great day for everyone.
That's asking too much. All right, drop-o-meter. I've got a few hitters here that are really struggling in the second half so far, which is right around 20 to 25 games. But Matt Chapman is batting 156 in the second half. He's got a 42% strikeout rate. Earlier in the season, Scott, we said you could drop Matt Chapman. And then there was a couple of weeks stretch there where it looked like we were going to regret that decision. And then now he's been blah again. He's still 87% rostered as Matt Chapman.
That seems high. Third base has been a surprisingly difficult position to fill. For the second straight year, there have just been tons of players there who haven't lived up to expectations. And I guess I can understand why Matt Chapman is so rostered, still considering, but still a little high for me. I'm trying to look up the strikeout rate. Yeah, 35.1% in July, 46.2% in August. That's been way up all year. It doesn't seem to be getting better. I'm hopeful. It's just because he was rushed back from hip surgery in the offseason. And hopefully he can get back on track next year. Still only 28. But I don't know. Not feeling it this year, though, for Matt Chapman.
Where does he rank? 1 to 10. Drop-o-meter.
On the drop-o-meter, I will go, I'll go 8.
So would you drop him for Abraham Toro Hernandez?
The shallower the league, the easier it is to say yes. But, you know, in a deep league, you probably have someone else you can drop for Toro anyway.
Mm-hmm. Would you do it for Ty France in a shallower league?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Next up, we have Alex Wood. A little questionable on this one. I don't know where I stand still. I'm trying to figure out Alex Wood. I went to the game last week on Thursday, Diamondbacks, Chase Field. I saw Alex Wood get ripped by the Diamondbacks, pitches against them again today. Goes 6 innings, but he allows 5 runs, did have 5 strikeouts. Only 5 swinging strikes on 82 pitches. His last 5 starts, Alex Wood has a 6.10 ERA, the drop-o-meter for Alex Wood.
I think it was one hitting the Diamondbacks through the first 5 innings, and then it all came apart in the 6th.
Sure did.
Let's say 7 for Wood. The format that would be really hard to drop him in is a points league because he has relief pitcher eligibility and starting pitchers you can put in that relief pitcher spot in that format can be very valuable, at least when they're in line for 2 starts, as he was this week. You know, he still mixes in some good starts, but it's been pretty uneven of late. And his previous 4 outings were all less than 6 innings.
Next up, we have Max Kepler, who's batting 180 in the second half. Another ofer on Tuesday. He's 79% rostered.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time. That I got an auto-playing video here.
Max Kepler.
All right, Max Kepler. Yeah, he's probably like, let's say 7 for him, too.
Next up, Casey Mize. He was at the Orioles on Tuesday. 4 1/3, 5 hits, 4 runs. Velocity down on all 5 of his pitches between 1.1 and 2.4 miles per hour. He's allowed 4 runs in 3 of his last 4 starts. Could be starting to wear down a little bit here, Scott. Casey Mize is still 86% rostered.
Yeah, I kind of defended him after his last start, but I'm not going to do that this time. I will give him on the drop-o-meter an 8.
Michael Conforto, in 43 games since returning back in June, he is batting 175 with a 650 OPS. And we've been trying and trying and waiting and waiting. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Michael Conforto. He's in a contract year, too. I thought at some point, you know, that might factor in and he just wakes up. I think he's better, obviously, than the player he's shown us thus far, but He's all the way down to 73% rostered. Should that continue to drop?
I mean, I think so. If he's showing no signs of turning it around, the underlying numbers for him have looked pretty much like they've always looked. It's not like he's had big strikeout issues. You know, the exit velocity, the hard hit rate, they're not amazing, but they never were. They weren't last year, you know? So the launch angle hasn't really changed. I don't know. It's very strange. But I've been talking about Conforto as a buy low candidate virtually all season, but we're in the middle of August now, you know? So I'll drop a meter. I'll give him a 7. And the only reason it's as low as a 7 is because I'm accounting for the 5 outfielder leagues.
Yeah. I would only drop him somewhere where you have nobody else that you can drop, right? Like a shallower league. You just need someone to put in your outfield that can give you something, because right now Conforto is giving you nothing. But I'm looking at the StatCast page too, Scott. I'm with you. There's nothing there that says that he should be this bad. So I would try. I would try to hold on to him, but I get it. If you need someone to actually give you some type of production. Last one here, Tommy Edman. He did go 1-for-4 with his 7th home run of the season on Tuesday. He does have 19 steals, which is also very good. But since the beginning of June, 56 games, Tommy Edman is batting .228, 3 homers, 9 steals during that span. He's basically just steals. He's not even giving you many runs scored. Batting average is down. He has a ton of eligibility. He has 4 different eligibilities, Scott. Where is he on the dropometer?
Well, part of the reason he's not scoring runs is because for a guy who doesn't hit for much power, he doesn't get on base much either.
Yep.
And we've always known that for him. But his on-base percentage is for the season is, or at least going into Tuesday's action, it was below 300, the on-base percentage. So dropometer for Tommy Edman. Let's go 8. Obviously, if you play in a league where, you know, like a standard roto league, and steals are such a priority for you at this stage of the season that you're willing to take the hit in the other offensive categories, then, you know, I can see how Tommy Edman is still a really useful player for you, but he's not somebody that really deserves to be protected right now.
All right, so a good amount of players that you can drop. Usually we don't get that high on the dropometer, but some high numbers for a lot of players here today. Did you know, I have some fantasy fun facts, some statistical tidbits for you. Salvador Perez had a double dong on Tuesday. He's now up to 29 home runs, which is a new career high. It's only August 10th. Did you know that Tuesday was the 10-year anniversary of his major league debut, Scott?
I did not know that.
That's right. Salvador Perez, feels like just yesterday, right? He called up. But 10 years now in the bigs, and the power has been phenomenal for him. 29 homers. Again, he is the number one catcher by far this season in both formats. Doesn't matter that JT Realmuto is going to give you his 6, 7, 8 steals. Salvador Perez is crushing it. X slug, exit velocity, hard hit rate, all in the 91st percentile or better this season for Salvador Perez. He has a career high hard hit rate. He's been awesome. So shout out to Salvador Perez. Eduardo Rodriguez went up against the Rays, 5 1/3, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts, 13 swinging strikes on 82 pitches. It has been a wildly inconsistent year for Eduardo Rodriguez. However, he has 8 strikeouts in 4 of his last 5 starts. And did you know, Scott, that over his last 8 starts overall, Eduardo Rodriguez has a 3.64 ERA with a 13% swinging strike rate?
I knew the underlying numbers were good. Yeah, I couldn't have quoted those exact ones to you. 331 xFIP too. So that would, I think that would make him fifth among qualifiers, just like Sonny Gray. And, you know, missing a lot of bats, as you point out. The K per nine is great. The BB per nine is very good. But he has an ERA over 5. So he feels like a really hard luck pitcher this year, like one of the most hard luck cases. And, you know, the fact that he's now had 2 good starts in a row, 10 strikeouts and 5 2-hit innings last time. Hopefully he's rounding into form here and starting to perform up to the peripherals. So, I'd rather have Eduardo Rodriguez than not have him based on all that.
Yeah, he's 85% rostered, so more likely than not, you're not going to be able to add him. at this point, yeah. But if you held on, the fact that over the last 8 starts, the numbers are finally kind of bearing out a little bit, I feel pretty confident in Eduardo Rodriguez.
It's pretty impressive that he's rostered in that many leagues, considering he has this 5.24 ERA, you know?
I think people might actually be listening to us, Scott. Someone somewhere.
Yep.
Did you know David Fletcher, over his last 7 games, he's batting .344 with 5 steals. He is now up to a career high 10 stolen bases. So nice to see Fletcher running a little bit here. It enhances his value, obviously, for category leagues. He's usually good for points leagues because he doesn't strike out. He makes a lot of contacts and gives you a lot of volume as well. Dylan Carlson, this one's a little bit more interesting. 3 more hits on Tuesday. He's still 85% rostered. Did you know his last 19 games, Dylan Carlson's batting .303, 5 homers, 1 steal, fly balls, and hard contact way up. Only an 18% strikeout rate during that time. So people held on to Carlson here, Scott, and it seems like they might be rewarded down the stretch based on this recent 20-game stretch.
Yeah. If it is now going to be normal again, that top prospects breaking into the league are going to need a long adjustment period as opposed to the almost zero adjustment period that most of them needed in recent years. If that's not just a temporary change owed to the loss of a minor league season last year, but for whatever reason, these guys are going to have a tougher time breaking into the big leagues, then we're going to have to recalibrate for that in terms of our own patience level. And maybe that's what Dylan Carlson's demonstrating now. Maybe he's finally putting it together after being up much of last year and, of course, all of this year and doing virtually nothing. Or maybe he's just hot and, you know, a week from now, we're going to forget all about him. I don't know. But it's possible. It's possible this is him breaking through. Obviously, good pedigree, still very young. We thought he had upside, and maybe he's delivering on it now. By the way, David Fletcher, you mentioned .344 batting average over his past 7 games, and I know you're mostly pointing out the 5 steals he had during that stretch, but David Fletcher, going back to June 1st, is batting about .350.
That's massive.
58 games. He has massive. Been, yeah. Yeah, he has been, he's been money lately.
That's why the steals are huge for him, because he's not just empty batting average now. He's leading off. He's giving you some runs scored. He's now giving you some speed. So nice to see David Fletcher enhancing his game, expanding his game rather a little bit more. Last one here. Did you know Brandon Lau did go 3-for-4 with his 25th home run on Tuesday? Over his last 54 games, he's batting .263, 16 homers, 2 steals, 27% strikeout rate, 50% fly ball rate, .263, 16 homers. So great for Brandon Lau. I believe that since the beginning of June. This is who he is, right? The first 2 months, he was bad. Since June, he's been great. Scott, I moved him up, adjusting the ranks. I'm still in the process, but I've got a lot to adjust. I moved him up inside my, I believe it's top 12 second baseman now. Might be an overreaction, but I moved him ahead of Ketel Marte.
I don't know that I'd do that. No, I have Ketel Marte 6th. I have Brandon Lau 10th, though, so I agree with you that he belongs in the top 12 at second base. This kind of turnaround he's had, that's what we keep waiting to see from Michael Conforto.
Yeah.
It's happened for Brandon Lau. It's been happening since the start of June. Where are you, Conforto? What are you doing?
Where art thou, Michael Conforto? Brandon Lau has been awesome. Anything to see here, starting pitcher edition. We'll run through a few pitchers who pitched on Tuesday. Jake Odorizzi went up against the Rockies. 5 shutout, 3 strikeouts. I did not realize how awful he has been recently. He's down to 58% rostered. Anything to see here?
I mean, this starts not moving the needle for me, not on its own.
All right, well, how about J-Hab? Good old J-Hab at the Pirates. 6 innings, only 1 hit, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. His first 2 starts with the Cardinals, 11 innings pitched, 3 runs, 9 strikeouts. J-Hab.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot more for him to perhaps to be back in the circle of trust. I don't know that when's the last time he was in the circle of trust, right?
Probably the last time was when he was on the Pirates, right? The team that he faced on Tuesday.
No, he was great with the Blue Jays too. And I think even with the Yankees, he had some stretches where he was pretty hard to bench.
I don't know, Scott. If he was good with the Yankees, I don't remember it, because I remember a lot of bad from Jay Happ. Yeah, I was wrestling with picking him up in a 15-team roto league this week because the matchups were so good, and I just couldn't do it. I was like, Jay Happ is so bad, and then he goes out and does this, and I'm just left kicking myself. Tristan McKenzie up against the A's. 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. Had 14 swinging strikes on 86 pitches. Pretty impressive. Oakland has the 9th lowest swinging strike rate this season. Tristan McKenzie has quality starts in 4 of his last 6 starts. However, the only 2 where he didn't, he allowed 11 earned runs. So he's still inconsistent, but you see a start like this and it's pretty impressive.
Well, 2 good starts in a row. He had been alternating good and bad starts since coming back for the minors. So, you know, you're probably getting all the bad starts and missing all the good starts. The control's definitely been a lot better for McKenzie since his return. He was walking too many guys early in the season. 7 walks between the 5 starts. And, you know, getting plenty of whiffs too. So Tristan McKenzie, I would say, you know, I've compared him to Touki Toussaint in the past as high upside pitchers who just have trouble with consistency. And I'd say McKenzie, I'm more interested in rostering him than Toussaint at this point.
Would you look to add McKenzie anywhere? 44% rostered?
Sure. I wouldn't add him. Yeah, he's not like at Josiah Gray level of needing to be added or Logan Webb level. But let's see, who would I drop for Tristan McKenzie?
Would you drop Casey Mize for him?
Yeah, I could see doing that.
Okay.
I could. I'm not saying it's a must, but I could see doing it.
Okay. Last one here that I have was Drew Smyly. He was up against the Reds. 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, 19 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. Where did that come from? Anything to see here, Drew Smyly?
I don't think so. I mean, this looked more like the Drew Smyly the Braves thought they were signing, the one who dominated for the Giants in a tiny sample last year. But yeah, I don't really see it. It's not obvious to me that anything changed between this start and the last. So I'm going to just chalk it up as a fluke for now.
Let's rank some outfielders that are rostered in less than 10% of CBS leagues. Chaz McCormick, over his last 5 games, he has 9 hits with 1 homer and 1 steal. He's 7% rostered. Adam Engel hit his 7th home run. Last 15 games, .255 batting average, .375 OBP, 2 homers, 4 steals. The problem is he hasn't been starting every game. When he started recently, he's been batting 2nd for the White Sox, so that's a pretty valuable spot to be in. 8% rostered is Adam Engel. Lewis Brinson, last 19 games since being recalled, he is batting .328 with 3 home runs, strikeout rate 28%. Still high, a little bit more manageable. He's 7% rostered. And then Hoi-Joon Park hit his first home run of the season on Tuesday. He's batting .321 over his first 8 games with the Pittsburgh Pirates, 3% rostered. Scott, how would you rank those names? McCormick, Engel, Brinson, and Park. Deep leagues, obviously.
Yeah, McCormick, Engel, Brinson, Park. I don't know. It's hard to care that much between them. I would definitely have McCormick first because I think he plays the most regular. Well, I mean, Hoi-Joon Park and Lewis Brinson, I guess, are going to be playing more now. I don't know. I think the most potential is Brinson, but we've been able to say that for years now, and it's interesting that he started to heat up, but you know, I'm not holding my breath. He's finally figured it out.
Somewhere, Nando DeFino is smiling about Lewis Brinson. Some leftovers from Tuesday. Freddy Peralta was at the Cubs, 5 1/3, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. He has now had, he's averaging 94 pitches over his last 2 starts. That'll definitely work for Freddy Peralta's value. So if he's going to do that, I've got to move him back up my rankings. I dropped him for a little bit because it looked like they were going to use some kind of piggyback situation with him, but the pitch count back up for Freddy Peralta. Sean Manaea got knocked around by Cleveland. Cleveland's hot all of a sudden. 1.2 innings, 5 hits, 3 walks, 3 earned runs. That's 2 clunkers in a row for Sean Manaea. I don't see anything drastic in the numbers. Luis Patino at the Red Sox. 6 innings, 4 runs, 7 strikeouts, 1 big blow. He gave up a 3-run homer to Hunter Renfro. You see anything here, Scott, worth holding on to Luis Patino? He's 61% rostered, and it just kind of surprises me that it's that high. It's probably because he has a two-star week.
Yeah. Yeah, you see big swings in rostership for starting pitchers because of two-star weeks. That's not so surprising. I mean, he's talented. I think there's a good chance he develops into a good starting pitcher, but he's kind of in that Tristan McKenzie, Tuki Toussaint group right now, in that, you know, it's talent with occasional blips of production as opposed to something you can really rely on. And so, I mean, Chris nailed it earlier this week talking about Patino. It's, you know, he's so fly ball oriented. It's going to be a struggle keeping the ball in the yard. And I don't think right now he's missing enough bats to get away with it.
Yeah. No, I think it's very well said. He has potential. He's just got to find a way to put it all together. And right now, really just relying on two pitches, that fastball and that slider. So he's got to expand a little bit. Starling Marte picked up his 30th steal of the season. He now has 8 steals in 10 games with the Oakland A's. It's just rapid pace for Starling Marte. A modest 7-game hitting streak for Cody Bellinger. Baby steps, but moving in the right direction. Corey Seager put up 3 hits, including his 5th home run. He now has 8 hits over his last 5 games. Very welcome sight. And then Daniel Lynch was not good against the Yankees. 4 2/3, 3 runs, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts, but 17 swinging strikes on 100 pitches for Daniel Lynch. I was a little surprised to see, Scott, that his roster rate is only 22%, considering his previous 3 starts, which were all pretty good for Daniel Lynch.
Well, yeah, that's true. They were pretty good in terms of result. But I think we were less than convinced, and I presume a lot of other people were too. But it is interesting that, what else? The swinging strikes, that's what I'm going to point out, way up in the last 2 starts. I know the result in this one wasn't good, but 17 swinging strikes, and that was after getting, let me see here, Lynch, his previous start, 16. So 16 and then 17 swinging strikes his last 2 starts. I mean, if he can keep that up, then, you know, there's a pretty good chance he's going to be useful. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that.
The call to the pen, some bullpen updates, and let's start with the Brewers. Devin Williams picked up his 2nd save of the season with Josh Hader currently on the COVID IL. For the Angels, Raisel Iglesias picked up his 25th save. The Cardinals, Alex Reyes got his 26th save. For the Braves, Will Smith got his 23rd. For the Twins, Alex Colomé now has 4 saves over the past 7 days. Where was this earlier in the season, Colomé? I needed you, buddy. The first year I actually invested in you, you let me down. He's 30% rostered, Scott. I know he's bad, but I think that number needs to be way higher considering what we know about Taylor Rogers and the Minnesota Twins.
Well, what do we know about the Minnesota Twins?
That Alex Colomé is their closer right now?
Yeah. Well, the Twins are bad. You know, there are a lot of new closers on bad teams. Of course, after the trade deadline, Alex Colomé in Minnesota, Dylan Floro in Miami, Spencer Patton in Texas, Tyler Clippard in Arizona.
I've got a Spencer Patton update for you in just a second.
Okay. I'm anxious to hear it. We don't know really who's emerged in Pittsburgh, but we hope it's David Bednar. I would, in terms of talent level, in terms of keeping runs off the board, I would put Colomé near the bottom of that list. So, you know, it's nice that the Twins have given him save chances here recently. Are the Twins that much more likely than any of those other teams to give their closer regular save chances? I don't think so. Could be wrong. But I'm not that motivated to pick up Colomé, I guess, at least not relative to those others.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's not good, but if you need saves, he's the one that's getting them right now, right? So him and Kyle Finnegan, right? I don't think either one.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
I don't think either are good pitchers, but they are the de facto closers for their respective teams right now. Scott, if you need saves, would you actually drop Craig Kimbrell for Alex Colomé in a categories league? Which just sounds so gross.
No. I think the other categories, Kimbrell's still going to be useful there. Mm-hmm. I'd be more likely to do it in a points league, probably. Because what do you care about reliever ratios in a points league? That makes a very small difference.
Yeah.
But in a points league, you can probably do better than column A off the waiver wire because it's rare that all closers are rostered in a points league.
All right. Spencer Patton update. What everybody was waiting for here. Came in the bottom of the ninth in a one-run game. He walked Jake Bowers. He walked Jared Kelnick. He gave up a single to Cal Raleigh, which loaded the bases. He then walked Jake Fraley, tying the game. Proceeded to strike out J.P. Crawford, strike out Mitch Haniger, and then was relieved by Brett Martin, who got Kyle Seager to fly out. So Spencer Patton blows the save, then does just enough to keep the game going and will not even get the win if they find a way to hold on to this lead. So thanks a lot,
Spencer Patton. So Joe Barlow, you know, Spencer Patton, 33 years old, no major league track record. It was kind of surprising he was doing what he was doing, and it wasn't over a very big sample. So he does seem to like he's kind of falling apart here. Joe Barlow is like the new Spencer Patton. He's come up even more recently. His numbers are awesome. He's only 25. So he's somebody I might keep an eye on if you want to speculate, if you have to speculate that deep for saves.
Yeah, no, definitely a name to pay attention to. Joe Barlow, up over 12K per nine at this point. Only 12 and two-thirds innings pitched, but has only given up one run so far this season. A few other updates.
By the way, in that same game for the Mariners, Diego Castillo worked the eighth again. Paul Sewald worked the ninth and actually gave up the lead. He entered a tie game. He allowed a solo home run. So I don't know.
I would be interested. I would imagine that it was a tougher part of the lineup. It was, I think that's 9-1-2. Couldn't really tell you what the Rangers lineup is nowadays. Yeah, 9-1-2. So Diego Castillo faced that part of the lineup. And then Paul Sewald came in the ninth, gave up that home run to who? Adolis Garcia, who we just spoke about earlier. A few other updates for Cleveland. James Karinchak allowed a game-tying run in the eighth inning. Emmanuel Class A pitched a scoreless nine. We've said before, we think this is very clearly Class A's job for the time being. And then for the Giants, Jake McGee allowed two runs, took his third blown save of the season in the ninth inning. Tyler Rogers pitched in the eighth. Some streamers to stream or not to stream for Wednesday. First up, we have Ryan Weathers versus the Marlins, Matt Harvey versus the Tigers, who is the Dark Knight. He is not Harvey Dent. And I don't know what Chris was getting at yesterday. He's not Two-Face. Well, maybe he is now. But Cal Quantrill versus the A's, Joe Ross at the Mets, Merrill Kelly at the Giants, Tyler Anderson versus the Rangers.
Joe Ross at the Mets. That's definitely my favorite. I could see Tyler Anderson versus the Rangers going well. I could see Merrill Kelly at San Francisco going well just because he's on such a run right now. But by far, the one I trust most is Joe Ross at the Mets.
For Thursday, Logan Webb versus the Rockies, which is, yes, automatic stream. Yeah. Add him, keep him on your team. He's more than a streamer, but he's less than 70% rostered, so I did include him here. Marco Gonzalez versus the Rangers, Eli Morgan versus the A's, Kyle Muller versus the Reds, Vladimir Gutierrez at the Braves, and our good friend JT Brubaker versus the Cardinals.
No, get him out of here. It's over. It's over for me and Brubaker. We've broken up. It sounded better in my head. Marco Gonzalez versus the Rangers. You know, I don't love it, but that's my second choice to the obvious Logan Webb one.
Yeah, I'm trying to search for a third one here. There's not really anything that stands out to me. Mueller's been a little inconsistent. Gutierrez against the Braves. That sounds kind of scary. Maybe Eli Morgan, but probably not. Let's go with Logan Webb and Marco Gonzalez. We're going to wrap there. For Scott and Frank, thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.